That was Afro-Celt Sound System with Inyun Daughter, I believe. And you are listening to KHENLP 106.9 Salida. We've got Mayor Chuck in the studio here today. The city council meeting was last night. And I was going to say, make way for ducklings. Here comes Mayor Chuck. Yeah. He was in the front of the paper yesterday.
When I was a little kid.
Oh, sorry. Oop,
there we go.
Folks, we got a little technical problem here.
We're making
I need to have my second cup of coffee.
Well, we're making the transition from computer to reality. But anyway, I was lucky enough to be able to read my favorite kids' book to the kids at Head Start, Three Classrooms, and that's Make Way for Ducklings, great book written in 1941, great illustrations. They have three copies in the library.
Wow.
And it was a lot of fun. So that's my claim to fame.
Good deal.
Yeah.
Front page. So what else is going on?
Well, there's a lot going on right now.
New term.
You know, nobody ran against myself, Jimmy McCormick, Jay Moore. We had an uncontested an election in Ward 2, Steve Stewart. And we also had an unelected or an uncontested person signed up for city clerk, and that's Betty Schwitzer. So Steve and Betty were welcomed to the council yesterday, and Jimmy, myself, and Jay were sworn in for another term. Mine's 2 years. Theirs are four. And sort of begins, technically, it's considered a new council.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we're at right now. I want to thank everybody who stepped up. Steve and Betty for sure, and then Jay and Jimmy didn't have to go for it again either, and they chose to, and I think that's wonderful. There was nobody who ran for the city treasurer position, but we do have some applicants, and that's going to be an appointed position, so we won't know who those people will be for another 30 days or so. I also would like to take the opportunity on the air here to thank Hugh Young, Councilman Hugh Young from Ward 2. He completed his second term, chose not to run again. And for people who are paying attention, Hugh brings a really unique perspective, and I mean that very positively. He sees things in a way differently than I do, for sure, really valuable. And he also spent an enormous amount of time. A lot of what is happening fiscally that's positive in the city in this very difficult time was formulated by Hugh in an early stage and then tweaked a little bit, but ultimately put into action, and we all owe him a thank you for the 4 years he put in, and he said that he hopes to stay involved in special projects, and I'm sure he will.
What would one of those projects be?
I'm not exactly sure.
Okay.
What I hope his first project is taking a deep breath and stepping back. I know in his shoes that's what I would surely hope to do. He's still getting used to his new haircut. You know, that's a big deal. You know, he's got a family, he's got a job that's really getting busy, and so I'm sure his focus will be elsewhere for at least a short while, but he's one heck of a elected official and really paid attention, and I really appreciated the effort that he put in the past 2 years and when I was here. So anyway, that's what's going on with the city council. As I said in the meeting last night, I'm not sure if it's good news that no one ran against us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It doesn't feel like democracy in full bloom, but I'm hoping that it's for good reasons no one ran against us, and I also hope that people will keep their city councilman and myself aware of the big issues. Little issues, too, but it's the big issues that ultimately shape where the city is going and where it will end up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Yeah.
And what else? What else was on the agenda last night?
Well, the agenda was a lot of procedural stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What people may have noticed when I first became mayor 2 years ago, it seemed like we had packets. It seemed like we were studying for a grad school exam every other week, and yet we didn't get much done. And now what we have is, for myself, including two interims. I've had four city administrators in 2 years.
Mm-hmm, right.
The gentleman who is our city administrator at this time, mm-hmm. Jack Lewis, is doing, in my opinion, a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm seeing is it's further empowering the staff And we are making a stronger demarcation, and this is how it is supposed to be, mm-hmm. between the elected officials and staff.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, we're working daily on this, but what your council and mayor are supposed to be doing is making policy, and then what the staff is supposed to do is execute that policy,
right.
And administer it. And with Jack, I see that the staff is empowered, is producing more and enjoying it more, mm-hmm. enjoying work more, supplying the council with the stuff we need when we need it. And we're working on the council to really focus on policy. I should digress for a moment and say it's understandable how, myself included, we slid into a more administrative role early on.
Mm-hmm.
The guys who've been councilman for 4 years have had 6 city administrators. And at every transition, there's moments where there's nobody really running the show. And you tend to jump into administrative roles,
right.
because there's no one else doing it. You just don't have the manpower, the time.
Yeah. No one has the authority to make a decision, right?
So well,
you have to go to council.
It's like, yeah. And it's like a really, I think it's actually, it shows the council and their desire to do a good job in a good light, in the sense that it's just like when there's a hole in the football line, the good middle linebacker plugs the hole. And
right, right.
Now what we need to do, now that we have a great team, is we need to step back and look at the city from 30,000 feet above the city,
right,
or 20 years from now,
yep.
and create the policy that's going to lead us in the direction that the council decides
mm-hmm.
would be the place we want Salida to go. One thing that I enjoy about this go ahead.
I mean, basically, it takes you out of emergency mode, right?
Well, there's always emergencies. I mean, this global financial crisis is an example, and we'll have time to talk about that today, it's impacting the city. But
I mean, in other words, having to deal with the day-to-day emergencies,
I'd get away
from that, and mm-hmm. now you're finally able to concentrate on that.
Well, what you can do is that's what your staff is supposed to be doing.
Right. Exactly.
I would say it takes the council more out of a reactive mode mm-hmm. because I will tell you something. Chief Clark, Fire Chief Don Taylor, Public Works Director Rob Vance, you can list mm-hmm. all these people. Rob knows a lot more about roads than I'll ever know, mm-hmm. and honestly, I'll ever care to know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Chief Taylor, same with fire.
Mm-hmm.
Chief Clark, same with policing. And so it is really, I don't think, our place
mm-hmm.
to tell them what to do.
Right.
I'll give you an example, and that is, let's say there's some latest gadget or gidget that we read somewhere, and we're inundated with this stuff mm-hmm. from all these magazines that are sent to us that's going to enhance firefighting or police work.
Mm-hmm.
It is incorrect for me to go through the administrator. I would go through the administrator. It's incorrect for me to go direct them, we need to buy this.
Mm-hmm.
Rather, what the council's job or my job would be is for the council to get together and direct either department to, for example, we want to enhance reduction of crime amongst a certain age group. Mm-hmm. And then it's up to the experts to determine how to do that.
Right.
And that's, in a sense, the difference between policy and executive or administration.
Sure.
So that's what the council's challenge is, and we do have a work session coming up here with the council staff and our attorney to really focus on that long view. People would say, why the attorney? Well, you can have a long view, but if it's not something allowed under the Colorado State Constitution, there's no reason to make the first step because you're going to just waste time.
Right.
And so they're a necessary evil in this day and age.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what's going on in that regard. We are doing a lot of things to shift things from council meetings or to the council responsibility to administrative responsibility. We're changing some of the liquor licensing procedures. You won't be seeing 99% of them in the council meetings anymore. We won't spend any time on that. That'll be administrative. If it's something unique, it will come before
right.
the council because ultimately we have responsibility. Also, certain fees.
Mm-hmm.
An example would be the fee to license your dog or something mm-hmm. like that.
Right.
They're now in ordinance, so it's a lengthy process to get mm-hmm. them changed. And now we're changing it to a resolution. So what we're doing is we're dividing the jobs more cleanly.
And while we're on the topic of council structure, if you will, and you know, what the council does, what the administrative does, administrative side, where is the status with home rule? I might as well ask while we're kind of in that area.
Well, it's really easy for me to be amused by this whole thing. Home rule is firstly, I would have to check, but we're down to maybe one of seven statutory cities in the state. There used to be hundreds. So we're becoming
a dinosaur
of historical interest. We are a statutory city. Statute is from the word state.
Right.
And so we...
Our laws are based on state laws, right?
Well, they all are, but they're state laws that actually govern us.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, as something we'll talk about today, as this marijuana dispensary issue really spools up as it is right now, we are far more limited, potentially, as to what we can do,
mm-hmm.
because as a statutory city, we have to follow the state codes. The fence lines are really tight. A home rule city, we're anticipating, and this is still fuzzy,
mm-hmm.
it'll be determined in the state assembly this next term and in court,
mm-hmm.
they should have a lot more leeway. And when we say leeway, it's leeway in both directions. They might be able to allow something.
Mm-hmm.
They might be able to pull the boundaries further back. I think in the case of marijuana dispensaries, they'll have a greater opportunity to narrow what a dispensary can do and can't do. And and that's one of the differences. Home rule basically is the citizens of the city saying, we want as much freedom to govern ourselves as allowed by the state constitution. I think there's a huge fear amongst the population that home rule gives the public officials the ability to tax us.
Right, which it does.
Well, it doesn't, Andrew.
No.
Well, what it does is it gives more, for example, well, there's only one group in the entire state mm-hmm. that can approve taxes.
Hmm.
That's the voters.
Mm-hmm.
And that's...
True.
Right? That goes for a town of 400, Poncha Springs,
mm-hmm.
to the state assembly. So to the trustees of Poncha Springs, to the state assembly, they cannot tax you.
Mm-hmm.
It has to go to a vote of the people. So now, of course, your elected officials can be for or against. They can initiate.
Mm-hmm.
They can, although many of these, usually anti-tax measures, are initiated by the public, mm-hmm. you know, or actually usually by special interest groups,
right.
many of which aren't even from the state. So that is the fear. The reality is it gives us a lot more flexibility. When I say us, all the citizens.
Right.
And that's the advantage as we see it. It's an interesting thing. The city council would have to budget a certain amount of money.
Right.
And yet, this is a citizen-driven process.
Mm-hmm.
And so, really, if the citizens decide that home rule is what they're after, they're going to need to push us. I forget the exact amount. I think it's estimated $15,000 to $25,000,
mm-hmm.
in the current financial situation. That's a lot of money for the city.
Sure.
And we could use it elsewhere. And so rather than spend it and then have the two votes necessary to have it occur fail,
mm-hmm.
We are currently finding other places that we know it'll be of value to the city.
Okay.
So we can operate under the constraints of statutory cities at this time. I think it'd be to the advantage of all of us, and I mean everyone, even those who are against it,
mm-hmm.
To go to home rule, but at this point I don't see it happening within the next year.
So just real quick, taking taxes as an example, what does home rule grant the citizens, if you will, versus statutory?
Okay, well, here's a classic example. 2B, which is still in the courts.
Mm-hmm.
Three-quarters of the suit that the lodgers brought against the city hasn't been thrown out. I mean, they now have 30 days to make another argument.
Right.
But it's working its way through the courts. the confusion in that, and if anyone still has their League of Women Voters or their something that actually states the initiative on the ballot, it says an occupational lodging tax. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that caused confusion, and I was part of this, and I heard both sides, proponents and opponents, to be screw this up because it is semantics. Mm-hmm. Occupational lodging tax. That is a tax on the occupation. Mm-hmm. Occupancy lodging tax. Mm-hmm. That is a tax on the person who's in the room.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. A home rule city can have an occupancy tax, and they can also have it at a percentage.
But a statutory city cannot?
It has to have an occupational tax, and it cannot be a percentage. So two things is it is semantics when I say occupational. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is a tax on the occupation of lodging. However, if the room is empty, they're not taxed.
Right.
If there's someone in the room, it's $250, and they're allowed to pass it on. So it's really no different, but it sounds different. It's been used by the opponents to really confuse the issue.
Right, right.
For example, if you're paying your property tax, of which you pay none to the city of Salida, all your property tax goes to the school board, county, state. Mm-hmm. There is no city of Salida property tax. But when you pay your property tax, you pay that on that building, whether it's empty mm-hmm. or whether there's people in it. Mm-hmm. The occupational lodging tax you only pay if there's someone in the room. So operationally, it is the same. Where it remains different, and it would be far fairer if we could have levied a percentage. I mean, when you have someone staying in a hostel for $20 a night,
right,
having to pay $250, and someone staying in a deluxe room for $180 a night who has to pay $250, that's unfair, and yet that's limited by the fact that we're a statutory city. And the other big thing is statutory cities have to have their sales tax collected by the Department of Revenue.
Right.
And so that creates a two-month delay.
Yeah.
When what I'll talk about, if we have time today, is where we're at right now with our sales tax. Mm-hmm. So imagine running a business in tough financial times and always knowing what your profit is mm-hmm. 2 to 2.5 months out. Mm-hmm. You're always 2 to 2.5 months out. So that's a bad deal, I think. We could collect it ourselves, and we would know where we are day-to-day, which is in the modern day of computer business, you know, where the computers are monitoring money in and money out.
Sure.
That's not a hard thing to do. Mm-hmm. Now, there's some councilmen and some staff who don't think that's advantageous. If I was running my own business, I'd want to know day-to-day.
Sure.
That allows you to have a quicker reaction time. You know, we were not going to really know how we did in the last quarter of 2009. Until February, and we're not going to really know where we did in the what we did in the first quarter of 2010 until May.
Yeah.
That's 6 months, really. Of that can dramatically change the financial health of the city. So, and there's a whole list of those sorts of things. How you structure the government,
sure,
you have
sure.
more flexibility in how you structure it. You can and stuff like that.
So basically, it's on, home rules on hold.
Well, and this council is not convinced that it would pass.
Right. Okay.
That's the real issue. So that's on hold.
So moving on, what about sales tax? I mean, you mentioned, you know, the budget and sales tax collection. Why don't we move on to...
Okay, well, just to remind people, 2009, we set our budget, mm-hmm. and we set it at zero growth. Mm-hmm. So this, then what we saw... was the crisis was real. Mm-hmm. Financial crisis was real. We are on the globe, and when they say global financial crisis, it's going to affect us.
Sure.
So what we did is we trimmed 5% from that budget that was the same as 08. Mm-hmm. Year to date, and so you got to keep in mind with that two-month delay, we're going through
right.
September, mm-hmm. We are down 4.8%. So we are still within the budget that we trimmed. We are getting closer and closer. We were at 3 point something. Mm-hmm. And then August and September were down. Mm-hmm. It was reported in the Mountain Mail correctly. In August, we were down 8 point something percent. Mm-hmm. However, what our finance director does is looks at that.
Right.
And what we found is one of our major sales tax producers in 2008.
Delayed payment.
Delayed payment mm-hmm. in July and paid twice in August. Mm-hmm. So... when adjusted, it was roughly 3.8%. Okay. September, we find the same thing. And I've pretty much ceased to look at the month-to-month numbers mm-hmm. and more the year-to-date because that smooths all those anomalies out.
Okay.
But we are down 4.8, which is getting close.
Right.
But it's, I mean, when you look around the state, it's tough to say, hey, we're down. It looks
right.
good
other
compared to the other state. Man, yeah. There's places that are really, really having a hard time.
Yeah. I mean, some are down like 20-30%, right?
Yes, and especially towns like ourselves that largely rely upon the tourist industry.
Wow.
So we're doing well in a really tough economy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what's going on with that. We have a whole series of things that we should talk about, and we should probably rattle them off fairly quickly.
Sure.
The hot water line from the site owned above Pontius Springs that feeds this pool, we should have all the bid paperwork ready to go pretty quickly, and we should have a contractor working in late January, February.
Mm-hmm.
And even though working in the ground in the middle of winter isn't the best thing, for me anyway, it is the time to do this project. That's what the contractors tell the city administrator, largely because it's drier. You know, we have a lot of groundwater and stuff in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that is a happening deal.
Right, right. That's good.
Yep.
It'd be nice to have some hot water in there.
Yeah, I think our first issue, should this be successful, and we fully hope it is, we intend for it to be, is we're going to have to go back to cooling the water because it'll be coming in too hot for us to actually
use.
Wouldn't that be nice? And then in the long-term plans for that whole recreation area there at Sentinel Park, there's other uses for that hot water.
Yeah, I was wondering, I mean, is there plans for a soaking pool or something like that?
Well, there is soaking pools there. To my eye, they look pretty bleak. But that's one of the things.
I've never noticed them. But
well, it's because they've been closed.
Oh, well, there you go.
They're
in other areas, aren't they, outside the pool area?
Well, they were originally, we were using those as locker rooms because the locker room was so abysmal.
Oh, that's right.
And then you remember we redid the locker rooms.
Yep, yep.
Two summers ago.
I think I have been in those rooms.
So we hope to reinstitute that, but more so if we could start heating the hot water for the showers, heating the building, and actually utilize. We're an enormous amount of hot water runs through that place because the pool simply can't use it all. So that's in the long-term planning. So hopefully by, you know, late winter, we'll have some really hot water run into that pool, and we'll have a new problem, and that's cooling it down so it's usable.
Great.
The litigation with Pontius Springs is on hold, and it is in a mediation phase still. Right now, with Pontius Springs having some potential changes in their administrative level, it is on hold, but everybody still wants to move forward with it, and so I consider it hopeful still.
And I know there's some stuff we can't talk about there, but is we do know for a fact that, let's see, the Pontius Springs city administrator, is that right, city administrator resigned?
Well, as I read the letter, it was a resignation letter, but it seemed like there was a door left open. If the trustees would agree to her demands, she would stay.
Right.
You know, it's a tough position that both parties find themselves in. We, in just the past 2 years, we had three administrators, and we had Jan Schmidt, our finance director, step in at one point. And part of the deal is, you know, we're lucky. We have a few people on city council who have run their own businesses. We have some people who've made a living as human resource people and are on our staff now. And still, it is a doubt-filled process, you know, because you're hiring such a keystone person, or you're letting such a keystone person, in this case, you know, because technically that was a tender of resignation, resign. And so it's a situation that's fraught with insecurity, and I just hope the trustees in Pontius Springs are aware that we know what it's like here in Salida. And I've actually called the mayor. I did about four interim searches for interim administrators to give us here in the city while we were looking for someone a chance to breathe and have a viable hiring process. And I called Mark and offered, you know, not my services, but just to give them the outline that I created. And I'm sure others are more than willing to help out. But something that has been overshadowed by the dispute, the wastewater treatment dispute, is we're two municipalities in the southern end of the county. And for us to work together is really important. And so if this is an opportunity besides, you know, the mediation phase right now of the wastewater treatment plant or sewer disagreement, that we're really talking about teamwork solutions right now where we work together. And if we can continue that, that'd be wonderful. And if they seek our help, we're more than glad to offer it in their current situation. And I know it isn't easy. So that's what's going on there at this point.
Okay.
You know, something that I haven't been into recently, but Councilman Zierke and McCormick with City Administrator Jack Lewis were offered a tour. We just don't want to get in the, I don't want to get in the contractor's way. There's a, you know, it's, I was a builder for 14 years and the owners show up on the job and the job stops. And I want to avoid that, but the old hospital conversion to the city hall and county office buildings looks like it's going great. We should be online and move there March 1st. Not only is it going to create a wonderful facility to enhance the services offered to the citizens of Salida and of the county, but it's going to save a wonderful open space and a big chunk of shoreline from development or from just nothing. Of it being undeveloped by neglect. And so I think it's going to be a great thing, and hopefully we'll be in by March 1st or a date near that. And Tom and Jimmy reported that it's looking really good, that they were very impressed with what was going on in there. So that's a good thing. The other thing we have going on right now is a very complex negotiation between an alphabet soup of federal and state agencies, and that's the Natural Resource Center, which would be a center that would centralize all these recreation and an outdoor entities, state and federal, you know, on a single campus on the Vandeveer, roughly 16 to 20 acres. It would offer an entry to the city and to the county from the east. It would offer a centralized location where people could get licenses, information, maps. It also would create a nice anchor for Vandeveer as well, for that property. A very high-quality use for 20 acres of that property. And Councilman Jack, or Councilman, City Administrator Jack Lewis is working really hard on this as his staff. And that is one of our foci right now. It is one of those things that you can imagine trying to get all these entities together to create a proposal that's to their, that they can all agree on and have the money all hit the pipeline at the same time.
Right.
It is extremely complex. And I should mention, this is a project that Commissioner Tim Glenn has been working on for over 6 years. And,
I mean, is it still looking pretty positive?
You know, it's looking very neutral. Which for me is very positive.
you know, you have that many agencies.
Yeah, so thus far there's no agency saying, forget it, this isn't going to work for us.
Okay.
And they're actually, we're starting to create figures. This actually happened a few months ago, but we're starting to go from concept to reality, and at this point no one's run screaming from the room. So I think that's a really positive thing.
Great.
Yeah.
That's great.
Something else that our community development, every project we've mentioned right now, except for Poncha Springs, the Community Development Department has put hundreds of hours into. Poncha Springs, of course, that's water and wastewater, have put tremendous amount of time into it, plus other staff, finance staff as well. And those, all those folks deserve credit. There's been a project that's been undergoing for, that we've been working on for some time, and that is talking to the Union Pacific regarding an easement or a purchase of the far side of the riverbank, and also offering us a legal permanent easement across the rail yard to gain access to the Arkansas Hills up there in Tenderfoot Mountain. And Union Pacific has a reputation for being difficult to deal with. I don't know if they're difficult to deal with just because they're a really big organization, and to get a handle on who you even talk to is difficult.
Right.
But we're moving forward with that. Thus far, the negotiations, just like the NRC, it's very complicated. Hmm. Even though the NRC is, we're dealing with separate entities, Union Pacific is a single company, it feels like you're dealing with separate entities. You're dealing with the operations, you're dealing with marketing, you're dealing with real estate. And
oh, I see.
And they feel like different companies almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it has been quite a difficult project. Dara McDonald, our director of community development, has put an enormous amount of time in this, as has Mike Harvey, who's a local citizen and member of the Parks and Recs Board, and a lot of other people. Union Pacific has come up with a counterproposal, and we'll just have to see how reasonable it is. And when I say reasonable, it's how much money the city's going to have to put up to fulfill their criteria.
I see.
And it's not even for the purchase. It's basically for the underpass.
So the concept isn't the issue now. Now we're talking money, or is it?
You know, until you have a signature on a real estate contract,
right?
It is both.
Right, okay.
So what they've done is they've changed the criteria on us in this last go-round, but at least we know what it is.
Yeah.
And now we'll just have to we have to tighten up the picture so that council can actually see what it might cost to fulfill the criteria.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's millions and millions of dollars, we just don't have the dough.
Right.
If it's five or six figures,
right,
then we could.
Right.
Probably not in 2010, but
right,
maybe if we can do it over two or three years. So ultimately what we're hoping for here is a non-motorized trail park on the opposite side of the river from Riverside all the way down to Marvin Park.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would really enhance the feel of our city and
yeah,
create a wonderful amenity that people would want to come and take a walk downtown.
Extend the trail system.
And, well, how about have a legal access? Everyone who
That'd
goes,
be nice.
Everyone who walks or rides a bike across
the
UP land
tracks,
is a trespasser, myself included.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the lever that got UP to talk to us, is they would just soon not have trespassing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So,
especially when the trains, or if the trains start up.
Yeah, if, right.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still working on that. And the reason I mention some of these things that are kind of pie in the sky
mm-hmm.
is staff spends hundreds of hours on it.
Sure.
And even though we're not writing a check to UP
mm-hmm.
or the Forest Service or DOW isn't signing on the dotted line for an NRC, all that staff time costs us money. It costs
sure.
the city's citizens of Salida money.
Mm-hmm.
And so that goes back to what's policy and what's executive or administrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to the council to say, yes, we believe that that time and money invested by staff is worthwhile
mm-hmm.
for a particular project. And that's what we're trying to do there.
Good deal.
Yeah. So there's tons of stuff going on. And, you know, we tend to talk about what's new.
Well, I did like the new trail, actually. I want to mention that, you know, the Salida Mountain Trails that they're putting up the front of S. Very nice.
Well, and it's done.
Yeah.
It's done, and they have approached – in our budget,
mm-hmm.
there is something called the Conservation Trust Fund. That is money that's made, that is taken from the lottery
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and distributed for use for trails
mm-hmm.
and open space. And I believe land acquisitions that would aid us in trails, open space, and parks. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Can't use it for roads. Can't use it for any of that stuff.
Right.
And so because it's so limited as what it can be used for, we have budgeted $15,000 to be the match for a $100,000 grant that SPOT,
mm-hmm.
In league with Salida Mountain Trails,
mm-hmm.
They're going to submit this grant, and it's for trails up above or below the Methodist Mountain area.
Oh, okay.
So we would expand mm-hmm. our trail system to the area above 50 as well.
Nice.
And I personally believe that when you look at the cost of trails and the number of people using them and being associated with a local bike shop here, the number of tourists who come and use them,
sure,
that it's really pretty inexpensive for economic development,
mm-hmm.
pretty good use of our money. And I see people staying at the hotels on 50 riding through downtown, hitting the Arkansas Hills is what we're calling it. It's basically the area around Tenderfoot. And then I also see if we have trails directly above those hotels and 50, it's going to enhance things for everybody as well. So I'm glad to see Slide of Mountain Trails and Spot are still pressing for this. The city's budgeted $15,000 this year. I know they're going to the county. I don't know if the county's going to give them anything for development in that Methodist area. And, of course, then they have to get the grant. And this money would go directly to the Southwest Youth Corps. So we'd be putting kids from our area to work, building trails. And I think it's a good thing. So
is that different from the Southwest Conservation Corps?
No, that is a, that's what I should have said if that's not what I
Just didn't say.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot going on in that regard. Those trails you see now from the city, that's largely been done with volunteer help. And
absolutely,
they've been working pretty hard on that. It's great.
Yeah, it is wonderful. All right, what next? What else do we have?
Well, you know, what we did is we listed a bunch of new things. And when our neighbor buys a new car or truck and we see it parked out front, we notice that. When we put a new roof on, you know, we notice that. But this is a tip of the iceberg as to what the city does. You know, when we flush the toilet, it goes away. When we turn on the water comes on, and it's good water. We have, in the past 2 years, paved, you know, whether it's chip seal or overlay, well over a third of the 36 miles of road in our city, or about a third. We also, you can see that there is a pilot project of three, it's a thermoplastic type product, but it looks like brick crosswalks. And that will hopefully enhance the safety to pedestrians.
Across the road, right. And thermoplastic.
Well, it's, that may be not the right term, but it's not brick. And
it's a concrete.
It's concrete, and then it's pressed, but there's something else done to it. And it's not supposed to be affected by the, you know, the problem with brick is you get water between the brick and you have your freezing thaw and it breaks up. The plow blades bust it up. And this is going to be a demo. It's supposed to handle our winters and handle our plows and traffic, and we'll see how it works. This will be a demonstration. My point is the bulk of the work the city's doing becomes invisible because it is taken for granted. There are also things that I think the city are held responsible for that are not the city's responsibility. And, you know, people don't fully understand, for example, what the situation is at the recycling center at the pool. You know, basically the city has donated use of that parking lot. But it's actually the county recycling nonprofit that manages it. And recycling, we believe, is a good thing. To move it 10 miles out into the county, the gas we burn to recycle would be, you know, it would be a wash. It wouldn't be worth doing. So there are inconveniences that we all have to face for the greater good.
Is there a talk of moving that? Or?
There's not talk of moving that, but it is.
Some people have complained.
Well, and for good reason. I mean, people who live adjacent to it, there's folks who are using it as a trash heap, and that's inappropriate. That's what the dump's for. And, for example, we have local citizens using the dumpsters next to the RV dump rather than pay waste management to haul their trash away. But what they don't understand is the city is paying roughly $10,000 a year for those. It's for the use of the tourists. But we had to double up the number of them because so many citizens in these tough economic times are using them. But they're paying for it. Their sales tax money, they're making a choice of their sales tax money is going to go $10,000, which is roughly $300,000 of city sales, taxable sales, is going to pay for that. So, but what my real point is the city does a tremendous job on all kinds of stuff. At our last storm of, or two storms ago, 18 inches in town, those guys were up 24 hours a day plowing like crazy. Because we don't have snow emergency routes, and they're plowing around cars that are parked on the street. They're taking six and seven passes. And even though they plow the cars in, the roads end up clear. And these guys do a heck of a job, whether it's Public Works or the water treatment plant. We assume our water's safe. Lonnie, the manager of the water treatment plant, hates when I say that because, you know, it can happen. A problem could occur. But we have, I call them local geniuses at either end of our water and sewer system, trying to do the very best job they can, and they're educated guys and gals who really know what they're doing. So you kind of have to pay attention to understand it's not just the new stuff the city's doing. It's the maintenance of everything else as well.
Sure.
You know, so we have a heck of a police department, a heck of a fire department, but when you don't have a fire, you don't think about them.
Right.
You know, when you don't have a problem with the police, you don't think about it.
Oh, I think about them.
Anyway, so obviously a plug for the city, but there's plenty of stuff going on. One of the main foci of the council right now is being fiscally responsible. And not spending what we don't have. So we're throttling back this year.
Yeah, makes sense. Makes sense.
That's scary.
Yeah. It is a little scary.
Yeah.
It's a little scary. I mean, it affects us all.
Yeah,
is that about it?
That's about it. You know, we do have this meeting of amongst the city councilmen coming up here pretty quick. Where we're going to be doing long-term planning for the city.
Right, kind of a retreat thing.
Yeah, and so what I would suggest is if you have a vision of what you want, you get a hold of your councilman from the ward you're in. And you can also email City Hall and ask that your information be distributed to the whole council. Or you can write them, or you can, you know, deliver a note or say it to somebody. And we'll get that information because ultimately we do serve the citizens of the city. Sometimes it's a challenge because we don't hear from them.
Right, right. Very good. And that about does it, I guess, for City Squawk with Mayor Chuck. Thank you very much for coming in.
Andrew, thanks for giving me the opportunity. And
congratulations
to those who are now in our elected officials, and thank you to those who were.
And just so you know, we will actually, I did try to record this. Usually that works.
Okay.
And so we'll be podcasting it later. Go to khen.org if you're interested in picking up the podcast, City Squawk with Mayor Chuck. Up next, we're going to play a little more music for you, and wish everyone a great Wednesday. All right.